You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 170, and as promised, it is part two of the panel discussion about Neil deGrasse Tyson and Me Too, and I'm excited to give it to you. And also, I've got some stuff to say after. I think there's been some news since then. I want to address it a little bit. Nothing major, but worth talking about, and then I want to kind of give a little indication of my takeaways from this. So that'll be after, but here is part two with Christy and Chantel on Neil deGrasse Tyson. Going to his response, I wish, like, if this were me in this situation, I wish he had had a little more humility in this, and especially because it was in 2009, I wish, I don't know that I've seen this, but for me anyway, in my opinion, if there had been one of these apologies for one of these things that's obviously not you know, outright rape, I don't know how good of an apology you can even have for that. I think that's a totally different story. But when it's something like this that, you know, ostensibly there's an innocent explanation for it, why hasn't a man just been like, look, I'm so glad the Me Too movement has happened because it's given me a better understanding of why this was wrong. And I was wrong, and I'm very sorry about it. And now I understand that I would never do that again. I don't know why. I haven't seen anyone that I know of with the humility to say, oh, I was stupid. I didn't understand back then. And I'm so glad that things are moving forward and bringing a better understanding to men like me.
Dan Harmon.
Dan Harmon. Yeah, yeah.
Dan Harmon's admission, it's like an 8-minute video where he basically acknowledges that he was creeping on an employee, justifying it to himself. He ended up making everybody else uncomfortable around him because they had to deal with stuff he didn't want to deal with, and he was a jerk. And as a consequence, he ruined his own life, and he made her question her own value, which he, you know, regretted, and he didn't want to make any apologies. He wanted to say just that it seemed so easy to do at the time. And he made himself, he rationalized it to himself, and that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And when he realized that, he wanted to come forward and tell his story about how he was wrong and how he realized he was wrong. He said because of her tweet, because even though he was carrying it with him, he was ignoring it, and then her tweet made him face it. And he said, I want to make this process graceful, and I want to make it something that's normal and that everybody can kind of, you know, participate in, you know, like, or just, you know, this is the new normal. And it's not hurt his career at all, you know, acknowledging it and sort of leading the way on that. Nobody talks about that about him anymore. It's just Rick and Morty, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't even know that that had happened. So it's one that I just,
incredibly entirely powerful.
Yeah. I will.
Yeah.
And that was a less serious thing. That was a more serious thing is what I meant to say. So it seems like it would be even easier in this situation, but go ahead, Chantel.
Yeah, I was just going to say I was kind of surprised with his response because he has also championed himself as somewhat of like a women's rights supporter in terms of, you know, speaking for the importance of women in STEM and all of that. And you'd think he would have more women around him who would have been able to, at least if he'd reached out, provide a little guidance about how to handle this better. Again, also still leaving aside the first accusation because I don't really know how he would handle that. But with the other two, I mean, he could have had a much more engaging response in terms of using it as a learning opportunity. So I don't know. I was a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I agree.
Did we talk about the second incident?
No, we haven't gotten there yet. Okay. Just in case,
I thought maybe I missed it.
No. I mean, we've mentioned it.
We should go there now, maybe.
Yeah. There's so much I want to talk about. I wish we could spend more time on all of it. I was going to say earlier, and I meant to say this, and I forgot, when it comes to, you know, the severity, and I think you both pointed out that, yes, it's all on a spectrum of violating women's consent and that kind of thing. I think when it comes to these prominent figures, it's almost like a lot of people, and I would put myself somewhat in this category, who, especially when it's like, you know, whether it's Louis C.K. or whether it's, you know, Dan Harmon or whoever it is, somebody who you like and want to follow, is what's the line? And I, obviously it's a human thing. It's not going to be a fine, you know, bright, obvious line, but what's the line of a, of an instance of this that's past the point to where an apology could restore things and restore their reputation versus something like maybe this photograph thing, this tattoo thing, where my inclination is that if he apologizes, recognize what he's done, you know, then maybe it's an incident where it wouldn't be serious enough to where you'd say, okay, this guy's out of our lives. Like, we just can't even have him in public anymore, versus something obvious on the other side, which is, you know, like Cosby or something, where it's like, you know, get this guy the hell out of the planet. What do you guys think about, like, is that an appropriate way to think about it at all? Is that something you guys think about, where it's, you know, which of these events or what will be serious enough to where there's not really a comeback, no matter how good your apology is?
For me, I would say it's sort of like, okay, maybe this is a bad answer, but it's sort of like, you know it when you see it kind of thing. And I think it would come down to the, are they ignorant or was there an intent? Like, did they intend to violate the person? And I think anytime it comes to issues of rape, there was clearly an intent there. You don't accidentally rape someone. In situations like with Neil deGrasse Tyson and looking at her tattoo, that clearly to me is more ignorance. That's a symptom of him growing up male, feeling this entitlement his whole life, perhaps, and not even being aware of it. And it's not an excuse for it, but it's an explanation that it's, you know, he didn't necessarily have the intent to violate her. Whereas if you rape someone, you clearly have the intent. Or if you're, you know, like, unfortunately, with the Louis C.K., like, you know, you can't masturbate in front of people. I mean, there's clear intent there to be like deviant, to make people feel uncomfortable. And I think when we'd have to take each situation based on the context and based on as much information as we can have about it. But we know sort of somewhat intuitively when there's the intent to violate and when there's just an ignorance. At least I feel like I know. I don't know, Christy, if you have a different take on that.
I think the only difference in the take is just for me, just to expand on it, maybe to say that everyone might have different lines that they feel like can be crossed, or maybe for, you know, people who have done their time and shown true reform. So sometimes it can't be a black and white line because you need to see what happens. But yeah, I kind of agree on you know it when you see it. Because again, even for someone personally, other people might be able to move on it beyond it, and you just can't. And I don't think you can really judge someone for not being able to move on, because that's how they feel about it, and it's their relationship to the artist. So what do you have to do with it? Go away, you know. Keep your opinion on that person to yourself. Then, so yeah, I think it's we're being, I think, very postmodern about it. No grand narratives here of good and bad or anything.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this other incident, which I guess is the most recent chronologically. And
Can I just jump in really quick to say, because I know you mentioned earlier, and before we switch, I want to bring this up in case it becomes relevant, but just to be intersectional here, when you mentioned, and it was true, we're talking in this case about violating women's bodies, because you're talking to two women, we're talking about cases involving women, but obviously, and this pattern of behavior is highly gendered, in very specific patterns, but of course there are other victims as well. So just to say, in terms of Me Too, you know, it's inclusive of everyone who's been violated.
Well said. And so going to this event here, this is my opinion, but in some ways this might be the very worst of all of it, because not that it's more serious than the date rape one, but it's more recent and it's more, his apology is horrible. And he doesn't really, he kind of admits to the facts and also doesn't see the problem. So this seems like all kinds of bad to me. This was his assistant on filming. I don't know if it says what they're filming, but he's filming something. Maybe it's Cosmos for all we know. Season 2. That'll be interesting. Anyway, he was filming and he had a production assistant assigned to him. And according to her, he invited her to like a wine and cheese I don't know, visit at his place while there was another party going on that was more of like the production crew that, you know, that it seems like they both could have just gone to. And she found it really weird, but she also felt very pressured, you know, because he's her boss and has that power over her. And there's a lot of details. I don't know how much you guys want me to go into it, but essentially he very early on took off his shirt, had a tank top on, was cutting the stuff and was serving the wine and making sexual comments. And she tried to diffuse. Oh, this is so bad. She tried to diffuse the situation or at least bring his attention to the awkwardness by telling a story about her previous sexual harassment. And she says that he just like was like a brick wall, did not get the hint or figure it out, and went on to, yeah, and went on to try to, what was it? Did he try to hug her? Now I'll have to find that part. But at any rate,
I think I can fill in the last part for you. What happened is in the past, previously she had been the type that hugs coworkers.
Well, I want to point out, he said that. She denies that, by the way, just to point that out.
Okay.
Yeah, he says that she's the type to, yeah.
Yeah. So then, and he says that he always declined a hug, and he, I guess as some sort of weird joke, tried to say, if I hug you, I might want more, which to me is super creepy. But,
yep.
And then, so that night he decided to hug her and she declined. So then he went with some specific First Nations handshake he had learned, which was very intimate and involved holding hands while gazing into each other's eyes and then feeling each other for each other's pulse on the wrist. So super creepy, so especially understanding her frame of mind. I could see how that would really be creepy. I don't know if are you done with giving all the facts? Can I jump into my?
I think so. Sure. And if anything we forgot comes up, we can always, you know, put into the record.
This one seemed the most interesting to me in the overall Me Too conversation we're having here, because it's so, it could be just a really clear example of him just being a man who's not in touch with what is going on. It could be like giving him the absolute benefit of the doubt, saying that, you know, he really did just enjoy her as an assistant and he wanted to do something nice for her. So he had this wine and cheese, apparently, according to him, he's done this multiple times with people. He took off his shirt, so he was just in an undershirt. You know, I can flip back and forth between both sides and just understand how he just isn't in touch with how that would make her feel, because men haven't had to be in touch with how it makes her feel. You know, I could picture myself in her shoes feeling so uncomfortable. My boss just took off his shirt around me. He's holding a knife and making jokes, and I could see how she would feel threatened by that. And I could also see from his perspective, it was hot in the room. I'm more comfortable to cook without this shirt on. Oh, I'm holding this knife. Isn't that funny? Never thinking that he could possibly be a threat. You know, I think what's so interesting about the situation is giving everybody an opportunity to see, perhaps see both sides, and perhaps for men to try to be able to empathize more with what is going on when they're having social interactions with women. And especially when there's this power dynamic, like he's her boss and, you know, older than her, and maybe she looks up to him intellectually, to kind of start taking these things into consideration when interacting with those around them.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but I have this dream of helping to design a video game that helps men relate to women's experiences. And the way that it's played is you are a woman and you have to go on a date successfully and not have anything happen to you. So it starts off with like you going on Tinder and getting dick pics and, you know, like having guys seem nice and then turn out that they're weird or something, that, you know, like they start saying weird things like, I want to floss my teeth with your hair or whatever. And then you finally find a guy who's nice, but then you have to decide what to wear. Like, because when you go out, you know, if you wear things that are really sexy, you're going to get a higher risk of being harassed. But if you wear something really plain and it's on a date, you know, it won't go off well. And then you have to like get in a taxi and, or, you know, walk down the street. And if you don't have your keys in your hand, you know, you get attacked. And if, you know, and then you get in the taxi and then you have to be watching your phone on Google Maps. Otherwise you get driven into a dark alley and you lose. And just go through and see all the ways that we have to navigate the world just to go on a lousy date with a guy we don't know.
Yeah, and a date is a simple, like relatively simple scenario in terms of, like, you know, at least on the date, he assumes that he knows that you're also interested in dating him or being there with him, right? Whereas in this situation, when it's a boss employee type thing, it's like it even adds more complications to her just having to get through the interaction without
you
anything.
You could do a sequel game after my first one comes out.
Let's do it.
Navigating the
on
office.
The way to the date, you run into your boss or a coworker, and you have to like not navigate the signals that he thinks he's getting. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a brilliant idea.
Copyright, by the way, TM.
Copyright. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas men, I mean, back when I was going on a date, it's like, well, I have to try to not be crap. You know, I have to, hopefully I'll be interesting on this date. Like that's
like,
pretty much
like take a shower and,
yeah.
And I'll just start. And then
I did not put on too much cologne and wear clean underwear.
Yeah, it is true. I mean, you got to worry about some stuff. It's not as though a date for a man is totally anxiety free, but none of that stuff you just said really is any consideration that I've ever had to make. That's very interesting. I like that idea.
Yeah. And then, you know, just I think doing it in a video game first person format would just obviously appeal to the demographic that kind of needs to learn about it.
That's there was empathy. This Amy Schumer skit that was kind of like this, where I think it's her boyfriend or somebody's playing like one of those shooting games, you know, and then she jumps on it and she plays. Oh, you can play as a woman. And it's like it's very dark humor, obviously, but she's like sexually assaulted on the base or something. And then she has to like try to get people to believe her and they don't believe her. So it's kind of like that, what you're saying. It's very dark humor, but it's also effective because it's like, oh my God. But I wanted to, Christy, get your thoughts because I thought Chantel was maybe being really accommodating toward Neil deGrasse Tyson on this one. And I know maybe, you know, you were doing it for the sake of argument. I'm not sure. But for me, my reaction to this one was like, this is too much benefit of the doubt for me. Like, I can't go so far as to give this guy in 2018, by the way, this just happened. I can't give him that much benefit of the doubt. What do you think, Christy?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the scenario that was laid out by Chantal was entirely plausible. I mean, you know, one could put a very generous reading, and I think that that's being fair-minded. I actually think that, you know, that's considering exactly the sort of the he said, she said, and both of them being completely relatable and understandable, at least, you know, hypothetically and being charitable. I also think that, yeah, he really should have known better. Again, even if we take his claim that she hugged people in the office, which to my recollection, she didn't bring up the comment about wanting more. He offered that up, right?
My recollection is she brought it up for the last hug, like the when he did the Native American handshake thing. And he said that he did it like every time she offered the hug. That's my recollection of it.
All right. Sorry. I didn't read the article. So thank you for correcting me. But even so, that's just, come on, man. Like you just have to be a bit more self-aware than that, even if he was being completely ignorant. And if he wasn't, well, you know, what we have is at least here another instance where he did apologize for crossing boundaries to someone he wasn't attracted to in a public situation. So it makes it a bit more plausible that he wasn't entirely innocent in what he was doing and sort of knew exactly, especially with the sexual harassment story put in his face, that he was going to blow past that and try it on again. So, you know, for me, that's like, you know, what we talked about the first case, because the charge is so immense and it happened so long ago, it's kind of it's hard for me to put a certain question mark over his head because of this one. That's like I need to wait and see what happens case. But this one stinks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to ask your perspective because I found it a little interesting, and maybe it's one of these things that as a man, I don't totally get it. And I'm curious to get your takes on it. It seems that by both of their accounts, that she told him this made me uncomfortable and he apologized profusely. And I think I'm pretty sure they both agree on the fact that he apologized. And the last thing that was between them was she offered him a hug and he just gave her a hug. But she still felt that she needed to quit. And it was enough that she it was her last day and she couldn't. She said, I'm declaring it my last day with only a few days left of production, is from his words. That's really interesting. Is it the kind of thing where I don't know. I could kind of, I'm curious what you guys think of that, whether it's like she's not really accepting his apology or maybe just accepted it.
He crossed the line.
Yeah, just crossed the line, just didn't want to be around him anymore kind of thing.
Because you can't be around him and not think about that. And it's going to affect everything.
Yeah.
And so just avoid him.
Okay.
Just avoid him. That would be my interpretation.
Also,
from personal experience.
Right.
I wonder how much it might have also affected her, the reaction she got when she did try to report it, because I know, you know, he is quite famous. He seems to be sort of beloved by those who work with him, just based on comments I've heard from other, you know, like from Seth MacFarlane and people like that. So she reported it to someone and nothing got done and it was kind of dismissed. And I could see how socially that would just feel like too much to overcome in terms of no one giving her any support. I know I would feel like if I tried to report it and I was discouraged and I just felt so awkward, like why would I keep putting myself in that social situation, especially if there's only a few days left and I have the means to not work, you know, I would probably quit also. So I don't think it's weird that she quit. I think that makes actually a lot of sense. It actually, to me, seems like it might have even been more awkward than what is coming across in what I read. Is as inappropriate as I think it sounded. The fact that she quit, yeah, I think that it could have been even worse than what we understand.
And also in these situations, people have to victim write. And if she would have stayed on, people would have said, well, if it was so bad, then why didn't you just quit? And then she does quit. So, I mean, not to say that people have to victim in certain ways, but I think that's, you know, that's also a consideration now that victims have to take. And I think they've always had to take it on board, but it's a bit more complicated now in terms of like being more self-aware that it's a process that people are going to ask you about these things if you ever talk about it. Or if you decide to talk about it, you have to prepare answers for these things. And you know, maybe now we're just uncovering it more and talking about it more, but people just suffered through it silently before we started talking about it.
I'm so sorry. I think there's a quote that I had missed that I think probably we need to say because it adds a lot to this. I hadn't realized in all the reading about this because there's, you know, three different stories and I guess six different accounts of it. I had missed this in the Apatheos article. It says, Watson says she left Tyson's apartment quickly after the inappropriate sexual comments and that the next day she confronted him because she felt he had betrayed her as a mentor. He reportedly told her in that meeting that she'd never rise through the ranks in her career because she was too distracting. So, okay, I guess that having missed that does change how I was looking at it.
Wow.
Yeah, this is awful.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that either. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I might as well, while we're on it, I'll just finish up this paragraph that ends it. Watson says she decided to quit after the negative interactions with Tyson and that she told the story to at least one supervisor in hopes that he wouldn't hire more female assistants for the astrophysicist. That person reportedly supported her decision to quit and said she should tell everyone she had a family emergency to avoid more uncomfortable situations. That feels like not the best response to that.
That feels like rape culture.
Yeah.
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 And I wanted to add one other thing too, that I can't remember where I read it now, but I think I read somewhere that both of the second two people who came forward, they said that they hoped that it would help to shine a light on the first case. And like give people a bigger picture of how he behaves. So I don't know if that weighs in any way to how we feel about the first scenario, but it definitely shook me up a little bit when I read that.
Yeah, and I think we have to take these together because, again, it's about patterns of behavior and underlying motivations. So I think I'm glad they came forward. It's very brave, especially knowing the backlash they were probably going to get.
Yeah, gosh, it's so hard. Because going back to what we were saying a while ago, it really is still though a different category. Like I get trying to evaluate them all together. Certainly evaluating the second two together is very easy for me personally, but it still feels like a totally different person or a new level of depravity of someone who would plan and acquire drugs, do a date, that kind of thing versus, trying a very, very inappropriate, very bad come on to your, you know, seduction to your assistant is something that is still awful. But for me, it is really weird to think of that additional level of awfulness it would take to plan a drug rape like that. So I don't know. It's so hard to evaluate them in that way for me.
I think what I meant by that is, if you're going to bring up the first one, you're also, someone's going to bring up the other two.
Right.
And if you bring up the most recent ones, someone's going to bring up the first one. So I think they're now, because it's one person, they're going to kind of travel together, even though I completely agree with your assessment that they're qualitatively very, you know, almost quantitatively, they are criminally quantitatively different.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you both. And I was just wondering, sorry, because I have to leave in a few minutes, but mm-hmm. do we have any conclusions? I don't really feel that much more, I mean, clear in my head about anything, but perhaps that's part of what we're getting from Me Too is the conversation is partly as important as the justice that hopefully will come for some of the women that come forward.
When Thomas invited me on, it was a welcome opportunity to dig into something that I'd seen but not had time for. And what one, it's going to be a kind of a watch this space, you know, situation with this. Also, where there's smoke, there's fire, I guess, is the conclusion I've come to after watching the two clips that I referred to earlier and then this conversation and learning through the process of the article things that I didn't know before. So for me, he's going to have a question mark over him. And if other things come forward, I will be paying more attention to see if what the content of that would be.
That's interesting. I have a lot of thoughts, but I don't know. I know Chantel, you're on a time limit. I don't know if I want to, you know, bore you guys with them, but maybe I'm coming kind of on a different place than you guys. Maybe I'm ending up in a different place.
You ready to have him fired?
Oh, yes, because I think, well, okay. I can give a series of if statements, essentially. If the first one is true, then it, you know, there's nothing to be done. You know, if he is that guy, then I don't want anything to do with him, obviously. But given, you know, of course, the length of time, the fact that, you know, it's very tough to evaluate those things, it's hard to take a percentage, you know, like of that. It's really, you can't do like a probability thing where, you know, what's, if you find it 50% plausible, 60% plausible, is it, you can't really do that math of like, but the consequences should be like total, you know, it shouldn't be in public in a position. So how do you do 50% of that kind of thing? But so I guess for now, putting that aside, as we've kind of done, as we've talked through this, for me, I've kind of realized, I think, how bad the last one is, more so, like, I knew it was bad, but even saying and going through those details, it feels even worse to me. And furthermore, it feels like even under his version of the facts, which I believe her version of the facts, if I find him way more plausible than hers, I don't think his apology is any good. I think if you look at his apologies for the first two, the first one is like, okay, the picture one, it's like kind of okay. But if you look at them, it still is, oh, if someone was offended or if someone was uncomfortable, and if they had told me that, I would have apologized. And it's kind of that attitude. Like, my actions are fine unless, oh, it turns out somebody found it uncomfortable. So I'm apologizing because of that. You know what I mean? There isn't, to my view, there isn't a lot of, oh, it is totally inappropriate for me to invite an assistant to my house for wine and cheese and be in a tank top and do all this stuff. Like, I don't see any of that here. And this was more recent. Go ahead.
The part of the problem is, I don't know what his association here is. If I don't know who, you know, if I know Fox is somehow connected with it, but I don't know if he's in a production capacity, if he's doing stuff. And so part of it, the consequences is that I just don't know how he would be held, who's supposed to hold him accountable is kind of unclear to me. And because a lot of this is new information coming in that I'm having to process. So I'm trying to pause and wait and get some more of the facts. So if you have, a clear line of responsibility here and say, this is a consequence, I'm open to hearing it.
Interesting. So I guess I'm speaking like how I, as a previous, you know, fan of his, feel about it. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if that I'm advocating for you know, okay. I don't know.
I guess I wasn't, Chantel? This is it. I never said I wasn't a huge fan. So I'm more of an outside observer to this rather. So I don't feel personal. I don't have personal.
Like, okay, here, we'll put, maybe this is a good conclusion. Season 2 of Cosmos comes out. are you going to watch it? How do you feel about it? What do you, you know, like that's how I feel. Like, I don't know that I can watch it. Like, I just feel,
yeah,
I feel weird about,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I was thinking, because I'm going to New York in the summer. And my plan before all this came out was that I was going to try to go to the Natural History Museum and see if I can somehow like break into his office to meet him, like not break in, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, try to see if I meet him or go to one of his shows or something. And now I'm not sure if I will anymore, honestly.
You're not going to slide your hand up inside his jacket?
Yeah, no. But I think for me, I agree, Thomas, if the first one's true, then that's just it. Like, you know, something needs to be done. I mean, the statute of limitations is over, but I think that should have repercussions on his employment if somehow it comes out that it's true. If it's not true and we're just going on the other two, maybe you're right and I'm being too charitable, but I still think that he could learn and improve and maybe end up being a really great ally. Because
I agree that he could, but do you see that happening in his apology? Because I personally don't.
No. I tried to say before, I was a bit disappointed also with his apology, especially for the second one. And especially if that last bit is true about, oh, you're never going to rise through the ranks. Like, what? Like, that's just, yeah, that's that actually, if that is true, that makes me believe that the first thing is true more, because that seems like the kind of behavior that is more manipulative and predatorial. Mm. So yeah, I'm not sure, but there's a lot of ifs, and that's the problem with these situations, I guess, is that I don't really know. I don't know what happened. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I know, Chantel, I assured you, no way will this could be more than an hour. And I was totally full of crap. Sorry about that.
I could talk to you guys all night.
I know. I really, I'm really learning a lot and enjoying this. Thank you so much for being generous with your time, both of you. Maybe there'll be another cause to come back and have another discussion, because I really did enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I hope so.
I say yes in advance.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for having us, Thomas.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys. All right, so there's actually been one more accuser since we recorded. It is someone who, it's kind of in line with the other professional misconduct claims. Someone says that in 2010, I'll just read it. A fourth woman has told BuzzFeed News her experience of sexual harassment from Tyson. In January 2010, she recalled she joined her then boyfriend at a holiday party for employees of the American Museum of Natural History. Tyson, its most famous employee, drunkenly approached her, she said, making sexual jokes and propositioning her to join him alone in his office. In a 2014 email shared with BuzzFeed News, she described the incident to her own employer in order to shoot down a proposed collaboration with Tyson. And just think about that last thing, by the way. How... This really is the unseen cost, unseen by men often, unseen by the public often, of this Me Too stuff. You know, that's a woman who had to turn down working a collaboration with Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know, set everything aside, for pretend he hadn't done any of this. You have to imagine having to turn down a career opportunity like that, you know, an opportunity to do something incredible because you've been victimized. That's horrible. That's the cost of this that we don't often see. You know, it's not all we see is, oh, the man, oh, it's going to ruin his career. It's going to, oh, it's his reputation. But think of how much he has ruined in his actions. Think of how many professional opportunities he's ruined in what he's done. You know, I'm not speaking for anyone else. I'm not speaking for Christy or Chantel. I love the panel. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. I just wanted to offer some thoughts of my own as a result of all this and this new news. And by the way, I kind of wish this article had come out earlier. BuzzFeed, I really do think BuzzFeed does good work, especially when they are breaking news on this. This is like a 3-year story. Over the course of nearly 3 years, BuzzFeed News has spoken with more than 30 people for this story, including the alleged victims and their families, Cosmos crew members and graduate students and professors who were at UT Austin 30 years ago. Dozens more from that time did not reply to requests for interviews. So that's what BuzzFeed has been doing all this time. You know, they're making sure they have the facts and they have enough to go on. And I don't know, maybe they wouldn't have even published this yet if it hadn't been for the other, for Patheos or the other sources that picked this up. But there's more about the original accuser, the accuser of date rape. And it makes it a lot, I think, more plausible to me. I think it already was plausible, but I think it lends further credibility because, here, let me read you this. Amet's ex-husband, Mario Vella, told BuzzFeed News that around the time he first met her in 1986, she told him something bad had happened with Tyson and that he came up many times throughout their marriage. Though Vella never heard her use the word rape, he did remember that she described being drugged by Tyson and vaguely alluded to something traumatic. It actually was a sore subject, he said. It bled onto our relationship. It caused emotional problems for her. No one else BuzzFeed News spoke to about that time had heard anything about a rape or any romantic involvement between Tyson and Amet. And there was no paper trail, but it was a long time ago, many pointed out, and people didn't talk much about this stuff then. So there you go, an ex-husband. So, I mean, again, somebody who I don't think would have any interest in trying to make up a lie about this. I mean, that's the thing about these stories. When you try to look at it and actually break down the plausibility on all this, which I think is something good skeptics ought to do, and I think is something that, as I've said before, the skeptic community should be set up to do well. You start to have to look at this. She dropped out. What would have to be true for this woman to be making this up? What would have to be true? She happened to go to the same school as Tyson. She dropped out. It would have been had to have been for different reasons. And then that she later was able to claim was for this. She would have to have her ex-husband, not even her current husband, her ex-husband would also have to lie that she told him in 1986 about something bad happening with Tyson and about her being drugged. I mean, what's more plausible, all that? And by the way, she feels so strongly about this that she, not just in the wake of Me Too, by the way, not just like last year, but in 2010, she attempted to draw attention to this at a live Q&A, something which would have been a very harrowing experience. You know, what's more likely? All of that, that she's making all this up and all those things are true, or that Neil deGrasse Tyson did this, you know? And I think, as we saw with Kavanaugh, the defense will always be mistaken identity. Oh, no, that could, because that's the easiest way for all of that to be true. Somehow she has the wrong guy, even though she happened to go to the same school, by the way, as Neil deGrasse Tyson. And even though she told somebody in 1986 that this happened with Tyson, the easiest excuse will always be mistaken identity. Because it's the way to preserve most of the facts, but still have her be totally wrong and not know what happened to her. And I don't buy it personally. And I definitely didn't buy it with Kavanaugh. I explained at length why I didn't think that was the case. But be prepared. That's probably what you would see, from a lot of the apologetics. To me, this just, I mean, it seems plausible. I don't, it's more reasonable to me on the weight of the evidence that this happened than that it didn't. But set that aside. I can even say, totally setting the first charge aside, because it's a long time ago, it's the most serious, I get it's hard to deal with, pretend that didn't even exist. The story about his assistant is so damning to me, because again, he confirms almost all of the facts, and then just says, well, I'm sorry, oh, I guess I, maybe I made her uncomfortable. forgetting, you know, never mind that she quit her job because of this. Totally inappropriate. And then we have two other stories now with this one. We have two other stories with this new one of professional, in a professional setting, really inappropriate behavior that harmed women's careers. So what do you do about that? You know, how do you feel about it? I mean, again, just speaking for me, just reacting from all of this that I've taken in, the panel, the news, everything. For me personally, this is too far over the line. This would need a way better apology than the one he gave, which is kind of a sorry that people were offended apology, sorry that people were uncomfortable apology. It's nowhere near good enough to my mind. And that's my opinion on it. I don't think, you know, I don't think he should be somebody we hold up as a great public figure anymore. I think that this is enough for me personally that I feel like, you know, I don't know that he should be fired from his, if he still has an academic post. I don't know if he just works in popularization of science. I guess he's still at the head of the planetarium, maybe. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, think about the workplace sexual harassment that went on in this filming of what I guess is Cosmos season 2. That's not appropriate. I mean, if you did that in your job, think about that. If you were a supervisor, maybe you are a supervisor in your job, and you did what he did to someone under your direct, you know, chain of command, and you had a weird wine and cheese night where you took off your shirt, and you, even though you've met her fiance and she's met your wife and kid, and you did all this weird stuff with a Native American handshake. I mean, you know, it's pretty bad. What do you think would happen to you? You know, maybe you'd be able to keep your job, maybe, if you really made a great case. But you caused someone else to have to quit. What about that cost? You know, I just think that this is, for me, this is way too far over the line of make an apology and you're fine. You know, especially when it's as half-assed an apology as he made. So that's how, you know, it sucks, especially for Neil deGrasse Tyson fans. I consider myself a fan of his, not like a hardcore fan or anything, but, you know, I liked him. I like his work. I like astrophysics, so I like people who talk about that. But sounds like we need new heroes, guys. And if maybe a female astrophysicist for a change should be like the most famous one next up in line. Just a suggestion. I don't know who that is. I don't study the field a lot now, so I don't know who is good at popularizing that science, but. Maybe we go to somebody else now because this is inappropriate behavior. That's not good behavior. All right, that's how I feel. Again, just my personal opinion. I'm curious how you feel. Definitely give me a call on this one. Leave a voicemail, leave an email. I do want to further this discussion. I'm curious what you think. So voicemail, email, and we'll round those up at the end of the month. Thank you so much for listening. Again, a huge thanks to Chantel and Christy. Excellent stuff there. I wish we had more time. Maybe we'll regroup with them in the future because I really like that panel. That was fun. So thanks to everyone involved. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.